Hey, graphic audio fans, and welcome to another edition of the Dwayne's Pick Podcast. I'm Dwayne Beeman, and today we will feature the newest William W. and J.A. Johnstone Western, Tim Coulter No. 1, Coulter's Journey. Tim Coulter is a 16-year-old teen riding through the Oregon Territory with his family. Tragedy falls upon the boy when a group of white men masquerading as Indians ambush their wagons, killing his parents and the family that was traveling with them. The men kidnap his sisters, his girlfriend, and her mom, but Tim manages to escape and hide. The motivation behind this ambush is that the leader of the white men wants to start a race war with the Indians. Tim sets out to rescue the women and avenge his parents. Along the way, he meets up with a mountain man by the name of Jed Reno, who is on a mission to get those same dudes himself. Can Tim and Jed rescue the women and get a measure of revenge for themselves without getting killed? You're gonna have to get the book to find out. So, what we have here is a classic Johnstone story, full of tragedy, revenge, and courage from the protagonist, who turns out to be a boy this time around. Ken Action Jackson directs the title and is assisted by the talented duo of sound designers David Sidney and Casey Green. The cast is led by Ken on narration and Matthew McGee as Tim Coulter, along with Robbie Gay and Peter Holdway, among others. Here's Ken to tell us more about the production.
This is Ken Jackson, and I directed Tim Coulter 1, Coulter's Journey. American Westerns, as a genre, tend to focus on traditional conflicts in the Old West, such as law and order, cowboys, and clashes with Native Americans. The story of Tim Coulter 1, Coulter's Journey, is set in the Western frontier, pre-Civil War. But it's a refreshing change of pace because while it does deal with heroes, albeit reluctant ones, and villains, the events of the story are seen very much through the eyes of two ordinary people, a 15-year-old boy who survives an Indian massacre and a seasoned fur trapper who has lost purpose in his life. Their very different lives are brought together by a common goal, a desire to rescue a kidnapped woman and three girls. And it's the dynamic of their relationship that drives the story. I'm reminded of the famous Western story True Grit, which became two films, first with John Wayne and then Jeff Bridges playing Marshall Rooster Cogburn, because we see the world through the lenses of both the innocent and the jaded, and by the end of the story, both people are enriched by the other's perspective. It's a thoughtful adventure with good dialogue. And I feel fortunate to have Matthew McGee in the role of Tim Coulter and Robbie Gay as Jed Reno, the trapper. These two actors really connected with their roles, and they feel really authentic as the characters. The book feels like a mystery at times, at other times a coming-of-age story, and it is ultimately an adventure, an against-all-odds rescue mission. It's gritty without being gratuitously violent. I think the whole family would enjoy it. And if you are a history buff, or even if you aren't, I think you'll appreciate the factual accuracy of the circumstances. So you really get that you are there feeling. I learned a lot directing this story, and I enjoyed the authentic feel of the American frontier that it evoked. After you listen to Tim Coulter, I hope you will say the same. Thanks for being part of the graphic audio family.
Like I said, this is a classic Johnstone story, the kind that the graphic audio nation clamors for. Therefore, it's a no-brainer to get yourself a copy of Coulter's Journey today. It's that good. Let's listen to a sample clip of Graphic Audio's production of William W. and J.A. Johnstone's Tim Coulter No. 1, Coulter's Journey.
Tim Coulter woke up with a start. He didn't remember falling asleep. In fact, standing in the freezing water, he didn't understand how he could have fallen asleep. His waterlogged legs felt numb. It was morning. He could see the beavers and the few rays of sunlight that managed to sneak through the wooden dam the animals had constructed. He also smelled something. Someone had lit a fire and was cooking breakfast.
Mama?
Tim came out of the water. The sun felt good, and his face was warmed by the touch of daylight. He smelled salt pork sizzling in a skillet.
Ma? Ma! It's me! Pa!
Tim found the smoke, white and small and snaking its way through the trees.
Margaret! Nancy! Patricia!
Then Tim saw the shadow rise in front of the smoke. The shadow moved toward him. The man in greasy buckskin standing before him was not his father.
I told the breed that you was hiding in that beaver dam.
Huh?
The breed, he says, nah, that squirt ain't Coulter. He says...
Where's my ma? My pa?
The bearded man grinned. His teeth were blacker than his hair, which was braided, Indian fashion, and hung well past his shoulders. He wore buckskins and moccasins. A hatchet hung in the belt around his waist, along with a big flintlock pistol. Loop earrings of shiny brass and tarnished silver hung in his left ear, and his hat was the head and tail of some wild animal Tim did not recognize. Red, yellow, and black markings were on his face, not covered by the thick black beard. War paint of some kind. Vermilion. Whatever else Indians used. The buckskin man with braids stepped closer.
You'll see him soon, boy. And your ma, too.
With that, he drew a knife that had been sheathed behind his back.
Real soon.
You're white.
Aye. And you're dead.
Tim turned and ran, but the man moved quickly. Tim had covered five strides when he fell headfirst into the creek.
Knife would be too easy for a sister like you, boy.
The man tossed the knife to the bank.
You'd be as wet as a trout. Let's see if you can swim.
The man leaned forward, planting both hands on Tim's shoulders, and shoved him into the water. Tim's head banged against the stones lining the bed. His lungs screamed for air. He tried to bring himself up, but the man was too strong. He had maybe a good foot and more than 100 pounds on Tim, and he was a man. Tim knew he was only a boy. In a moment, he would be a dead boy. Just when Tim thought his lungs would explode, he felt himself jerked out of the water. Water poured off his face, his head, his shoulders, and his arms.
Not so fast! Not so fast! I had to spend all night out here waiting for you. I want you to die real slow. Then I'll cut off your head and show it to the breed.
But...
Once again, his head hit the creek bed.
Die, boy, but die slow. Slowly. So you can remember me and your death when you're dancing in the fires below.
How's it feel, boy? You ready now, kid? You ready to die?
Holding a stone, Tim's right hand smashed the corner of the man's head. Tim pushed himself up. Blood gushing from a gaping slice in his forehead, the man pulled the big horse pistol.
Die! Die, Pete!
Likely, water had fouled the powder. The man threw away the useless weapon. He turned, searching for the knife he had tossed aside. The killer found the knife. But Tim was no longer there. Tim was running. Running for his life. Tim reached the woods. Briars and brambles slapped at his face, ripped his soaked sleeves. The man with the knife was right behind him. Tim lowered his shoulder, leaned forward, and ran as hard and as fast as he could, using his arms to shield his face from the low branches and brambles. He slid down a little knoll of straw and rocks and picked up a piece of old wood from a tree branch. Wielding the stick, maybe 4 inches in diameter and 3 feet long, he turned on his knees and looked up the incline. The man emerged from the woods and slid down the knoll. The limb flew apart. But the mountain man fell, sliding past Tim. Tim sprinted back up the trail. At the crest of the incline, Tim ran back through the woods. To his left stood the clearing, the prairie, the hills, and the camp. To his right flowed the creek. He turned that way, bursting from the woods. Behind him, the big man ran out of the forest. Tim saw what he thought might help and lowered his arm as he ran. His hand gripped the walnut stock of the pistol the man had dropped, and he brought it up as the man dived behind him, his fingers catching just enough of Tim's left leg to send him tumbling to the ground. He came up and saw the man coming at him on his knees. Tim swung the iron barrel of the pistol. Again, the man dropped to the ground. Tim ran back toward the woods. Tim ran into the woods and made a straight path along the animal trail into the clearing. He ran to the campsite where his mother had been killed. He saw the two wagons. He was played out. He leaned against the big wheel. Still gripping the knife, the man was coming at him, running as fast as he could. The big man leaped over the dead body of Matilda Coulter, tripped over her hand, and down he went, landing on his stomach. It seemed as if Tim's mother had tripped the man with her outstretched hand. It didn't happen that way, of course. His mother did not move. She could not move. She was dead.
Man!
Tim watched the man push himself up with his right hand. He came to his knees. His left hand held the bone-handled grip of the knife and pulled, but the sweaty hand could not pull the knife out of the man's own chest. The man looked at the knife sticking out of his chest. He stared back at Tim.
A kid? He got me.
He fell to his side, dead.
If you enjoyed the sample clip of Tim Coulter Number 1, Coulter's Journey, you can purchase it at www.graphicaudio.net. The book is available in all available download formats, MP3, M4B, and FLAC, as well as MP3 CD. And you can listen to this download and all available downloads through our Graphic Audio Access app, available for Apple and Android devices, which you can now stream your books on the go. Also, if you want to enjoy Graphic Audio in small size bites for your commute to work and back home, you should check out our new podcast called Graphic Audio Story Podcast, or GASP. If you like what you heard, please leave a 5-star review and tell us on how much you enjoyed it. Be back soon as I'll have another pick for you. Until then, peace.